Several years ago, I had two colleagues, and the three of us were talking about starting a business together. And one of them knows me for many, many years. And he was thinking about the three legs of the stool. And he's like, hey, you know, I think you own this, and I think I own this. And Chris, I think you are going to own beauty. And I don't know why, but in that morning, that moment, I felt so diminished. Really? Just beauty? You know, what about all of this other stuff I've been working so hard on, strategy and all the rest of it? And I trust him enough to know me deeply and to sense that there was something really important here. And so rather than running from the concept of beauty, I wanted to, you know, open the hood and really look and see what is here.
I'm Brandon Vaidyanathan, and this is Beauty at Work, a podcast about how beauty shapes our world and the work that we do. In this season, we're looking at beauty in science. This episode is sponsored by Templeton Religion Trust and the Institute for Advanced Catholic Studies at the University of Southern California. More about them later in the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome. I am so thrilled to introduce my guest today, Chris Everett. Chris is a musician, artist, designer, strategist, coach, farmer, and co-founder of an arts nonprofit in Western Wisconsin, among other things, I'm sure. With over three decades in brand expression and strategy, he's a master at using beauty as a powerful medium for transformation. From his early days in graphic design to deep dives into brand strategy and organizational culture, Chris's career reflects a persistent quest to uncover the deeper meanings of the beauty that we encounter in the world around us. And he's deeply influenced by the teachings of the Delicate Lodge, a lineage of medicine wheel wisdoms that emphasize ceremony and ritual design. Honored as the Minister of Beauty in 2020, Chris embodies the belief in the sanctity of deeply human work and the transformative potential of beauty. And through his diverse roles and experiences, Chris also aids others in navigating their unique evolutionary journeys. Chris, such a delight to have you here. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much, Brandon. That was a beautiful intro. I really appreciate that.
Sure. I mean, I'm such a fan of the work you're doing, and I'm delighted we're going to have a chance to talk and explore your journey. And with that in mind, I want to ask you to start with your childhood. What role did beauty play in your childhood, whether in art or music or whatever else you were doing?
I was born in Austin, Texas, grew up in Texas. I was there until maybe five or six, did most of my schooling in Houston. And then I went to University of North Texas as a piano performance major in north of Dallas. And beauty played a big role in my life, I think, in two different ways. One, through music, absolutely. I was one of those weird kids at 5 years old who told my parents, I want to take piano lessons. And evidently, I really meant it. I took to it like a fish to water and just I soaked it up. It's how I thought. It's how I kind of processed the world. And from there, the other piece where beauty shows up, we were a religious family in a very religious place in the world, the Bible Belt. And I started playing piano in the church when I was in junior high. And had a deep love early on for ceremony, for sacred spaces, and the way that music met those sacred spaces. And it oriented me, I think, in a very particular way around the power of music and community very early on.
Okay. So for music, how did you then, I mean, were you also doing visual arts at that time? Or how did you, because you started doing some work in the visual arts as well, right?
Yeah, I was a light artist early on. I was constantly drawing, but music was really my space. When I was in high school, I dabbled in just about everything, theater, picked up trumpet for a while, accompanied the choir, sang in the choir, had a few art courses. But interestingly, when I went to college, the end of my second year, Several of my incredibly talented friends were graduating and were kind of freaking out about how they were going to make a living as a pianist or a performer. And I started exploring the university and discovered the graphic design program. And I remember that very first class, it blew my mind. I'm like, okay, this is happening. How did I know about this earlier? Because it's exactly how I think. I'm a visual thinker. And I had, there's a whole other discussion about the ways that people are brought through school and taught how to think or process or regurgitate. And I have a hard time holding on to language, and I have a really hard time holding on to numbers and math. But I think visually. And so graphic design just really hit a beautiful sweet spot. And I ended up taking that path. I graduated with a Master of Fine Arts with a graphic design major. And it was a hard moment because music kind of became hit the back seat, although it has continued to carry with me through the course of my life and now has a whole different expression in my world. All of these kind of different paths have come together now. But I really didn't investigate visual arts deeply until I was in college. And at that same time, the universe brought an incredible mentor into my life. He was my best friend's father. And I will never forget going to their house for the first time, his parents, his mother and father. She was an interior designer, and he was a creative director for Bloom Advertising in Dallas, Texas, and was also an extraordinary painter. And I walked into their house, and again, it was kind of like the graphic design. It blew my worldview open. I'm like, people live this way. This home is so exquisitely beautiful, and every thoughtful piece and how you are in the spaces. And they introduced to me the idea of living an artful life, an art-centered life, and what that means for every aspect of how you show up in the world and how it feeds you. And Ken, my friend's father, was one of the first men in my life who like really saw me. And he said, I would love to be a mentor for you if that would be valuable. Wow. And I said, just a wholehearted yes, thank you. And we dove in, not into graphic design, but he taught me how to walk a tight wire in his backyard, which was about balance, focus, directedness, tension. We cooked together. We made music together. We did body work together, and then we did graphic design together. And he taught me an entire philosophy around art, design, and beauty, and the way that it embodied his life. And the ripple of that moment hits my life now very deeply, and how I live, and my marriage, and a beauty-centered, art-centered life, which is not just an aesthetic, but it is a practice. It is a discipline. And so that was the seed that really carries through now.
Yeah. Could you say a bit more about what struck you as you're walking into their home, and like, what did it look like in practice for them, right? To live this sort of art-centered life. How was that conveyed to you?
Yes. It, in many different ways. I had a lovely home growing up, but how do I put it in language? The home that they were living in, there was an ease and a flow of space and design and the way that they capture their life and each other, the photographs. And it wasn't just like a family photo on the wall and all of the little, you know, squares. It was a 6 foot tall black and white portrait of mom, of Jenny, that was just so breathtaking. There was a sense of awe in the spaces and the way that the space held you, and there was an interaction with it, and how the art making was woven into all of it. One of the ways that I think about it now, And it's how my mind works from a design perspective. Say you walk into a hotel lobby and it makes you feel a certain way. You feel sophisticated. You feel sexy. You feel elegant, whatever. I want to back off from that feeling and ask, okay, what were the 1,000 design choices that were made to add up to that feeling, which is color, texture, height, tension, relationship, how space and spaces are created. All of that minutia adds up to, it is a portal of its own into a way of feeling and being. It's an invitation. I think it was Charles Ames that talked about, one of the main roles of design is to be an invitation. Into an experience, into a way of being. And it is the difference between a practical home and a home that is so thoughtfully designed that you step in, it's like, ooh, I now feel a certain way. It has shifted something energetically in me. And that now shows up not only in my personal home, the strategic design decisions, because the design now has a purpose. How do I want people to feel and be in my space? Mm-hmm. We have an artist retreat on site. My husband and I run an arts nonprofit here, and we have a farmhouse that we have designed for our artists that come in. This year we have, I think, 34 artists coming from all over the country and stepping into a space. And so that space has a design creative brief. There is a strategy. How do I help these strangers, these artists, step into a space and feel, oh, they get me. I feel known here. I will be held here. And that it is opening me to be more creative and for the flow to start happening. That is not accident. It's not utility. It is something more than that, in that there are 1,000 signals that are set up in that space to allow someone to feel at home the minute that they walk in the door. I think that's what I'm pointing towards.
Yeah. And so you were cued into that as you're walking into their place and you realize that the way this space conveys something to you, makes you feel and so on, is very different from your home, from the other environments you've been in. But then you continued with a career in graphic design. What was that trajectory like? What did you did sort of this mentorship then start to shape the way you approach design, and what unfolded after this?
Yes, it's been such an interesting journey. I started in the advertising agencies, TV, radio, billboard, identity systems, branding writ large. And branding, in essence, is storytelling. It is understanding who you want to share your story with, and how you're meeting their need. And you are sharing yourself not only in a compelling and unique way, but in a way that is so authentically true to who you are. And it took me an arc to really understand the power of the storytelling and the graphic design. Mm-hmm. And as I got to understand the industry and interpreting campaigns and identity from the core of who an organization is, I'm someone who wants to know why. I want to get to the essence of the thing. And so here's the brief: do the design, create the fun ad, and why? What is this in service to? Who is this in service to? Yeah. And that eventually, over the course of time, I started in advertising. Every job, I changed medium. So I went into package design and retail space design, retail experience design, digital design. But I kept asking why, which brought me into brand strategy, which is building out a framework that articulates all of these things. Can we get to the truth of who you are, the truth of your vision, the truth of where you want to go, the truth of who it is that you are serving? Articulate that in such a clear way that you can get to a brand promise, which ultimately gets to proof points. And then what do we stand for in an organization? Beautiful. You can build these out all day long. And is it true? You can say this is who you are, right? But it, is the organization now embodying that from the inside? Is it authentic? Do we need to act differently to embody our best selves now? Which brought me eventually into culture work, culture design, cultural healing, cultural kind of reorganization and coaching, which of course ultimately leads to leadership. And so my work kind of went from that external storytelling piece now all the way into the heart of the organization, which is in leadership. And I recognized that for me to be in this space, I needed to do my own leadership development as well. And so I've been seeking out teachers and frameworks of all different kinds, some specifically in leadership development, but also just, I mean, this is all personal work, personal development. Who am I in this world? And so it's all kind of cyclical that way. But it's been an interesting arc because it kind of went from the outside to the deeply inside.
And then going back out again as you're working with leaders, right? And I'm curious to know what role then art or beauty has played in this journey, particularly in your work on leadership, both personally and in working with the leaders that you've served.
As I mentioned before, I keep getting back to the why and how. How do we know that it's true and it's real? If we are talking about development, transformation in some cases, evolution most of the time, from a place of intention, how do you make it count? How is that real? How isn't it not just a surface thing? We can have an aha moment, but then how does that truly integrate into your life so that I am now being differently in the world? From a design perspective, I now took a step back and started looking at experience design, studying a lot of people. They're a really remarkable experience designer, Ida Benedetto, wrote a paper that is free online called Patterns of Transformation. And she studied the patterns of transformation through three different, completely different experiences and said, what are the frameworks under here? What are the languages under here? How are the guides setting things up so that you were held safely and you were guided in a direction and there's the right amount of risk, which is kind of critical for real transformation? So they're kind of the core principles. But for me, getting back to my religious upbringing, I also just sensed in myself that there's something very powerful about ceremony, ritual, portal, sacred spaces, that this is not just outer work. This is inner work, which includes wisdom, values, taking on grief and trauma, your own narratives, but it's also spirit work. It's energy work. It's consciousness raising work. And that energetic container needs to be held differently than just a workshop in a conference room with a bunch of, post-it white things on the wall. And there's nothing wrong with that. But it is a different level of like truly opening up and going into something much deeper. And that brought me, when I was introduced to the medicine wheel teachings and the medicine wisdoms and the earth intelligence, what I love about them is that it is ancient and it is one part magical and in the spirit space. And it is also equally deeply practical. Here is something to do. Here is a way. One of the leadership tools called command is about raising up into observer self and assessing what is going on and what role am I playing and what is needed for everyone. And how do I, the diamond in the center is authenticity, sincerity, I'm sorry. So now how do I also step into this from a place of my truest self with my voice? It's beautiful and it's such a practical tool, but all of this starts with my own personal practice. And so I want to teach some of these practices, teach some of these tools, and including some other things that I have designed and from some other places. But that's how beauty has entered into the experience side of it for real and true opening and transformation of individuals.
You're listening to Beauty at Work. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Templeton Religion Trust as part of a grant on the aesthetic dimensions of science. Templeton Religion Trust supports projects as well as storytelling related to projects that seek to enrich the conversation about religion. To learn more about them, visit templetonreligiontrust.org. This episode is also sponsored by the Institute for Advanced Catholic Studies, a global research center located at the University of Southern California. IACS works to create dialogue, spark ideas, and sustain academic research on Catholic thought, creative imagination, and lived experience. Learn more at iacs.usc.edu. If you're enjoying the show so far, please subscribe to our podcast and take a moment to leave us a review.
You know, when we'd chatted last, you'd shared this moment when you had an insight or given an insight into your calling as a minister of beauty, and you had an aversive reaction to that phrase. Could you talk about the context around that experience and what that word meant to you and why you reacted to it that way?
Oh yeah, thanks for the question. And this is the subject where you and I are both lighting up beauty. Several years ago, I had two colleagues, and the three of us were talking about starting a business together. And one of them knows me for many, many years. And he was thinking about the three legs of the stool. And he's like, hey, you know, I think you own this, and I think I own this. And Chris, I think you are going to own beauty. And I don't know why, but in that morning, that moment, I felt so diminished. Like, really? Just beauty? You know, what about all of this other stuff I've been working so hard on, strategy and all the rest of it? And I trust him enough to know me deeply and to sense that there was something really important here. And so rather than running from the concept of beauty, I wanted to, you know, open the hood and really look and see what is here. Why did I have a visceral reaction of being smaller rather than bigger? And so I started a journey of research on what is beauty, really? What do the scientists have to say about it? What do the philosophers have to say about it? Priests, poets, artists, other designers, strategists. And it was fascinating. And it completely reoriented it. The whole concept to me, John O'Donohue wrote an exquisite book on beauty called Beauty. And one of the things that he wrote in the book was when we experience authentic beauty, it feels like a homecoming. And that lit me up. I thought, that is it. That was what my friend Richard was pointing towards in the first place. And I have on my website my opening statement. I wrote this in 2020, an artist statement on beauty, why beauty, and kind of my whole journey of research and looking into myself and seeing what society has to say about it. And part of why it felt reductive is as a society, we've reduced it to just glamour.
Yeah.
And that's not what we're talking about here. The glamour is the veneer part of it. What John O'Donohue is talking about is this, what I've come to believe is that beauty is nothing less than a shy peek at divinity. It is the crack in the wall where we get to re-experience God, spirit, mystery, whatever that is. But it is also the thing that weaves us all together. It is the thing that lives inside of us. And therefore, why wouldn't beauty be at the center of all of our transformative experiences? It is the way that we are cracked open and we remember who we are and where we come from and how we are connected not only to each other, but to everything, which means that beauty needs to be handled with reverence and it needs to be handled with care and strategy. It isn't just decorating. And right around 2019, a friend mirrored back to me in the same way, Chris, you are the minister of beauty. And I recoiled at that too. Not beauty, but the minister part. And that was my, it's the way this extraordinary universe works. It was the full circle back from my origins of being in the church and loving the sacredness of that and the ceremony and the ritual and the community and the music and being a part of the sacred space making. And it just, it was centered on the wrong thing for me. I felt like we were missing the point. And here in my mid-50s coming back, now I know in my heart anyway, what this is about and where it is that we're going and what these ceremonies and rituals are in service to, this great remembering, this great homecoming. And it is a reminder to me that I have to approach it and hold it and guide it and do my work from this place of reverence, that this is sacred work. And so I took on and owned Minister of Beauty and had my own ceremony maybe 2 years ago where I realized I had to set a threshold and walk over it and claim it. Huh. And it shifted something in me. And I will, for the rest of my life, continue to unpack what it is and what it really means. But it is completely right, and it holds the work, and it holds my language and my way at the same time. Hmm.
Could you point to something that has concretely shifted, I suppose, in your practice and in the way you either approach your work or create the spaces that you inhabit or build? That have shifted since this recognition of, you know, owning beauty and being a minister of beauty? Has something concrete changed that you could point to?
Yeah, that's a lovely question. A couple of things come to mind. We're talking from my farm right now. We have 57 acres in western Wisconsin. And as I mentioned, we have a arts nonprofit here, Everwood Farmstead Foundation. We host performances, workshops all summer, and then we have an artist residence, our artist retreat on site. And a couple of things have shifted. One, my relationship with the land. I've always loved land, grew up, you know, with the prairies and in Texas and the rest of it. And so I've had an appreciation for it. And then I got to be a steward of this place. And in the caregiving and the husbandry of the land, there's been great joy. But something fundamental shifted as I started doing the medicine work and leaning into a space of ministry, which is now I have a relationship with the land. And every single morning I walk the land and I am in full communication. I am connected to the earth. I'm connected to the moss. I hear it in communion with me, and I am supported in a different way. And so there's reverence in being in a listening and a back and forth relationship with this place where I am, knowing that energetically it is supporting many other people as well. The spaces I set as sacred spaces. Before every performance, I sage the barn. I invite our ancestors, the ancestors of this land, the ancestors of everyone who is going to be there, and the musicians or whatever, be with us, support us, bring us what we need in this moment. So it's a healing space. Same for the artist retreat. I've created spaces for artists to go for meditation. A couple of years ago, I created a self-guided walking meditation in the woods called the Singing Path that is based on a particular medicine wheel. I call them the four harmonies, and there's a threshold, and you have some cards, and we just set them in and go deeper with your relationship with nature and remembering nature within yourself. So we're not just hosting, we're not just creating spaces. We are creating experiences for people, for healing, for opening, for reconnecting communion with each other and communion with the land as well. And personally, I find myself showing up in relationships and in my work differently. I have my daily practice to kind of center myself energetically and remember why I am here, which provides a sense of calm and centeredness in my work. But even in the real tense moments, I had one last year, I pulled back and asked myself the question, because I could not figure out what is the way to move forward here. And I thought, well, what would a minister of beauty do? And it completely reoriented my response from one of being defensive to one of what is needed right now for the best of everyone. And so that has been a helpful question in all of those moments of what is needed and how do I show up as a minister versus just a hurt human.
Wow. How did the farm and the artist retreat come about? What led to that?
That was a surprise. My husband, Bill, and I had a loft in downtown Minneapolis. And we were and had a very urban life. He would bike to work every day, walk to work every day. We loved it. Minneapolis is a wonderful city. And we were craving nature and some spaces to gather friends and have some kind of more intimate time together. And Minnesota is a very lake cabin culture. We are land of 10,000 lakes. And while the lakes are lovely, we were craving space and land. And part of this may come from my own upbringing. And I think that we thought we were going to buy some land and build. We started down in Pepin on St. Croix and worked our way up the Driftless Zone, which is really beautiful, bucolic rolling hills. And after putting an offer in on three or four places, we ended up here at this farm, mostly because we just wanted to see this incredible barn that's in great shape. And literally, we drove on the property in the driveway, and it took both of our breath away. There was something energetically that was just like, this place. And we walked around just kind of buzzing. Logistically, it makes no sense. It was all overgrown. Every building needed to be repaired. But this place just called us. And we bought it and started renovating the farmhouse the first year. And then the next year, we went into the barn. The barn is about 2,500 square feet. It was built and finished in 1914 at the beginning of the war. It's built out of California redwood, which makes no sense here in central western Wisconsin. It is a beautiful church-like space. And the more that we were in there, we just felt like something's got to happen here. Something centered around community, healing community. Both of us have been big art supporters over the years on many boards. I'm an artist in several ways. And so we thought, let's just experiment. And we invited four artists, a director, an actress, a composer, and a poet. They stayed for 3 or 4 days. They wrote a piece. We had maybe 30 friends show up, and we had this extraordinary evening in the barn. And I will never forget, we walked out of the barn at the end of the evening and stood on the edge of this field, and it was covered in fireflies. Our jaws were just dropped, but it kind of felt like everyone was saying, yes, yes. And so we thought, all right, was this good for us? Yes. Was it good for the artist? Yes. Was it good for the audience? Yep. Felt like it was good for everyone. Let's try it again. And so we kept prototyping and testing and sharpening for about two and a half years until we knew what it wanted to be. And evidently it wanted to be an arts nonprofit. And so I did the brand work that I usually did for others, business strategy for ourselves, mission, vision, values. We created a board. We knew what our pursuits were going to be. And over the course of the first 10 years, started the artist performances, our artist series, until that was humming. Half of all of our proceeds go to the artists. The other half go to local art school teachers. This year, we're going to break $50,000 to local art school teachers. got the workshops up and running, launched the artist retreat. This is our 11th year now. And everything is kind of in space. We're looking about how do we go deeper here. But all of it is in service to supporting the artist. Because we know when the artists are happy and healthy and nurtured, it's good for everybody. And why artists, you know, their job is to find fresh language for the human experience every day. We are in a time where language seems to be failing us. It's turning into rhetoric. And maybe through dance or through a poem or through a song, we can reorient ourselves to the hard stuff. And of course, you put beauty on the top of that, and you've got something really powerful happening.
Wow, extraordinary. How do you articulate the mission of your artist retreats and your nonprofit? Like, what is ultimately the goal, would you say, there?
Our mission is to host inspiring spaces for artists to perform, teach, and work in a natural environment.
Okay.
And our mission, again, which is all focused on the artists, we don't reference our audiences.
Sure.
Our vision, our hope as a result of that is to heal and reweave our broken communities back together again.
Yeah.
We're in a really interesting spot. We're 1 hour basically directly east of the Twin Cities. We're an hour west of some larger cities in Wisconsin. And so our audience is a very diverse mix of urban and rural, all ages, all beliefs. And I think many of our audience members would never speak to each other on Facebook.
Yeah.
And yet here we all are in the barn together, picnicking together, and experiencing some incredible beauty together. And we have witnessed over this last decade some real healing, truly, and some new maybe uncommon relationships that have come out of it as this has become a new community. And the reality is none of us are cardboard cutouts.
Sure.
And I think social media and the rest may want us to believe that we're one dimensional, that I'm defined by one thing.
Yeah.
And we're not.
Yeah.
And so we're all in the barn together, face to face. And how powerful is that for healing?
Is there an example that stands out of one of these transformations, one of these changes that has come about because of beauty that you were able to catalyze?
Yes, I will offer one story. We had an incredibly remarkable Cuban jazz and classical pianist here named Nachito Herrera. He lives with his family in Minneapolis now, is co-owner of one of our larger jazz clubs. And he was discovered as a kid in Cuba playing a major Rachmaninoff piano concerto, and was brought to the States. He's an extraordinary talent. And he's played at Carnegie Hall and Lincoln Center and somehow said yes to come play in our barn on our, at the time, questionable grand piano.
Okay.
So Nachito was here. That week in particular, there was the shooting in El Paso that Monday, the week before. In Texas, it was heartbreaking. And that whole week, Bill and I talked about just how heavy our hearts were as the news stories kept coming in. And that Friday, we were driving to the farm from the cities, and there was an NPR piece about the impact of this on that community and those families. And we were both in tears. This was fairly early on. And we had a great discussion about the nature of this community in this barn, that if this is a sacred space, is this a space to take this on? Or is this a space that people come to get away from it, to see something and experience something different? And we chewed on that for about 24 hours and came to the conclusion that this actually is the space to take it on, but maybe take it on in a different way. Before every performance, I do a little experience design. If our mission and vision is about reweaving us back together, you can't go up and say, "Hi, my name is Chris. Our mission is, and our vision is." We need to experience it. It's that transformational thing. And so I will do a little experience design before every show, not only to get everybody present because we are a listening room, but to remember what friend, neighbor, colleague feels like again. And so how do we navigate this without, again, dividing?
Yeah.
And so welcome to Everwood. We're so happy you're here. I have to be really honest. This has been a hard week. My heart is just hurting for what happened on Monday. Are you feeling the same? A lot of heads were nodding. And I said, I have a question for you. And that is, what do you need from Everwood tonight? Do you need camaraderie? Do you need cookies, sweetness, nature, friendship, a hand on the shoulder? What do you need tonight? And had everybody quiet for a moment thinking about it. I said, beautiful. Would you turn to the person sitting next to you and let them know what you need? And so everybody shares. I bring them back. Perfect. We're going to have an intermission in 90 minutes. Would you find that person and make sure they're getting what they need? So this sets a stage now for Nachito to come. And the point being, we didn't talk about guns. We didn't talk about why we were sad or upset, but just that we are all feeling unease right now. And what do we do as a community? We look out for each other.
Yeah.
You tell me what you need, and I'll just make sure, you know, I've got my eye on you. That's what community feels like. Mm. Nachito, who told us afterwards, he said, that set me up in a completely different way. He had a whole set list of what it was he wanted to do. And everybody was like leaning in. And he said, I thought, I'm going to experiment with something. And he just started playing and everybody was with him. He threw out the set list and he went in a completely different direction than he thought he was going to go. So he ends the evening by saying, I feel like I can tell my immigration story and I want to share it with you. And he talked about how he came to the States. He fell in love with the United States. He was going to bring his family here and 9/11 happened and everything was shut down. And he was separated from his wife and his kids for 2.5 years.
Wow.
And they finally came and he talked about how difficult that was, but how determined he was going to use his music as a way to heal. And he said, I love this country and I am so grateful to be here with my wife and my family. And I will do everything that I can to give to this country and this community. And then he did an improv version of God Bless America.
Wow.
That was weeping and gorgeous. And there was not a dry eye in the entire place. There is someone that I know in the audience who has, you know, very kind of far right, rigid beliefs, who is in the barn, got to experience this whole thing. And I had my eye on him and I'm like, I'm wondering how this is being received. And afterwards, he was the first person to shake Nachito's hand and say, thank you. I am so happy to know your story. So I feel like the beauty and the intention and the sacredness healed several kind of things in that moment, including Nachito and his ability to fully bring himself and his story to the moment and how that moved everyone.
Wow. Wow. Extraordinary. That's really incredible. So delighted that you're doing this work. And I think it really speaks to the power of beauty to transform us. For those who are in our audience wondering what it might mean to live a beauty-centered life, you know, a bit more, what tips might you offer? What would you recommend to them?
That's such an interesting question. I'm actually beginning to work on an experience offering. I just introduced a bundle of 8 experiences a couple of months ago that I'm calling the Hum Experiences. The website is humexperiences.world, that are teaching some of the ceremonial tools, ways to connect deeper with nature, some simple practices that you can do at home. And one of them that I want to design for next year is exactly what you're asking. Mm-hmm. Dancing with beauty, living a beauty-centered life. And I will go back to where I started, that in, say, putting a home or a room together, there are functional questions, but a big part of the question is, how do I want this to feel?
Yeah.
And what energy am I setting? And how do I want to react with it? How do I want others to react with it? And that could be a room in the house. It could be a room in your property, outdoors. There are portals and entrances and ways to say, all right, I'm going to honor this and then be held. And it's all sensorial, you know, it's what you see, it's how you feel, it's what you hear, it's what you smell, it's what you taste. There's just such a richness of environment that can open us, that can shift energy. It is an energy exchange, ultimately. Everything has vibration. So I think intention is a huge part of it. This is going to be a fun one to explain because it's something I kind of know in me and I know when it's right. Yeah. And I want to get it on a table and articulate it so that it becomes useful for others. And I'm sure more useful for me.
Yeah, no, that's fantastic. And I think it's really sorely needed. I mean, you talked about us living in a sort of beauty desert, right? These days and the ways in which we inhabit our lives in the world. And I think these experiences are really crucial and also just the commitment we need to make to trying to explore this and, you know, on our own and to make this journey. It's really important. Where could we direct our viewers and listeners to your work where they could learn? I mean, we'll certainly put the, you know, Hum Experiences in the show notes, but, tell us where else we should direct our folks.
Yes. Thank you for that. My personal website, is chriseverett.world. And this was written and formed over the entire of the pandemic. It was an opportunity to slow down and really look at this crazy kind of world that I have created somehow as a designer and a farmer and an arts nonprofit person and a guide and all the rest of it, that I felt like there's something. I'm the same person at the center of all of those worlds. And so what is that? Mm-hmm. And I started with my artist statement on beauty, which is on the homepage. So chriseverett.world kind of encompasses the whole of my world, from guiding to artwork. And then our arts nonprofit is everwoodfarmsteadfoundation.org. And we list all of our performances and workshops for the year. And you can see the good work that's happening out here and the beauty of this particular place, which I feel every single day deeply grateful to be able to be in relationship with.
Wonderful. Chris, it's been such a delight. I've learned so much, and I'm sure our audience has as well. I'm so glad you were able to be with us and to share your story, your journey, and the amazing work you're doing.
Thank you. I feel really honored to be asked to be a part of this podcast and the conversation, and it's been a joy getting to know you as well. It buoys me in many ways to know that you are researching what you are researching and asking the questions and dedicating yourself to it. It feels really important to me, obviously.
Great, fantastic. Well, thanks, Chris. I look forward to seeing you soon. This has been really wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to this episode of Beauty at Work. Please be sure to check out our show notes for more resources from our guest. And if you like this episode, please be sure to share it with your friends. And please leave us an honest review. We'd love to hear what you think, and it helps to get the word out about our show. Music edited by Venkat Subramaniam, and the podcast was edited by Dave Visaya from Podcast Engineers. And thanks again to our two sponsors, Templeton Religion Trust and the Institute for Advanced Catholic Studies at the University of Southern California. research project on beauty and science, visit wellbeingandscience.com. Learn more about our broader project on beauty at work, visit beautyatwork.net. Thanks again, and see you next time.